Chapter 5. In mid-1946, Variety dubbed Dorothy Kilgallen as the First Lady of Broadway. Quite the compliment for a woman who had not yet reached her 33rd birthday. 19 years remained until the day she died. 17 until she met Jack Ruby at his Dallas trial. One indication of Kilgallen's fame during this time was being invited to the White House, where she frolicked with other noted personalities as President Harry S. Truman looked on. The star-studded event was held on January 28, 1946, and Kilgallen joined celebrities such as actresses Angela Lansbury and Alexis Smith, actors Cesar Romero, Zachary Scott, and William Bendix, and singer Joe Stafford. In a photo, Kilgallen is positioned to the right of the president in the front row. Later, in 1950, Kilgallen's anxiety grew as she waited to learn whether she had been chosen to become a panelist on the new CBS television game show, What's My Line? The concept was that each week, four panelists, three regulars, and a celebrity guest would question contestants in order to determine their unusual occupations. According to producer Gil Fates, the program evolved from an idea from a program called Stop the Camera, the brainchild of Bob Bach, formerly a disc jockey and producer at New York radio station WNEW, with an assist from Martin Stone, the developer of TV's Howdy Doody. Another version of the story stated that the idea for the show, originally titled Unknown Occupation, was strictly Bach's, based on his obsession with asking strangers on the subway or in bars their occupations. Finally, the news came forward. Kilgallen would join American poet, anthologist, critic, and editor Louis Undermeyer and actress Arlene Francis as the regular panelists. A year later, Bennett Cerf replaced Undermeyer when questions about his communist leanings surfaced. Upset with being displaced, Undermeyer told reporters, "No one connected with the program attempted to do anything in my behalf. I can't say Dorothy behaved worse than anyone else." Former radio personality John Charles Daly moderated as program host. A 7-story theater on Manhattan's West 54th Street became the production site. Years later, the infamous Studio 54 Disco, where Andy Warhol, Bianca Jagger, Gina Lollobrigida, and Calvin Klein watched pop performers such as Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, and Duran Duran perform, occupied the building. During one season's programs, Johnny Olson, the deep-throated announcer who later became best known as the voice on The Price is Right, said, "Time now for everybody's favorite guessing game, What's My Line?" Olson then introduced Kilgallen, and she appeared from curtains center stage, acknowledged vigorous applause by a live audience, and then introduced the celebrity panelist. He or she in turn introduced Arlene Francis, who then introduced Bennett Cerf, who then introduced John Daly. A bit of banter followed before Daly explained the rules of the game, and the first contestant entered. Daly then stated, "Would you please sign in?" Whereupon the contestant wrote his or her full name on the blackboard. The formality of the show, along with its liveliness, led to its becoming an Emmy Award winner, airing on CBS on Sunday night at 10 p.m. for the next 17 years. At its height of popularity, the show had a weekly audience of 25 million people. Kilgallen and Francis wore fancy gowns and expensive jewelry, with their hair always perfectly coiffed, Kilgallen's by Mark Sinclair, the men dressed in dark suits and bow ties. When a celebrity appeared on each program attempting to stump the panel, each panelist wore a blindfold to keep from identifying the mystery guests. They included Donald Duck, Elizabeth Taylor, Joe DiMaggio, and Walt Disney. Many of the programs are available on YouTube, including one where comedian Groucho Marx was the celebrity guest. To date, More than 1 million viewers have enjoyed that episode. To call Kilgallen a fashion plate regarding the wardrobe she wore on the program is certainly an understatement. A lavish string of pearls nearly always accentuated an expensive dress, flattering her ample bust line. At one point, she told a friend, "Those Fifth Avenue boutiques are going to bankrupt me." Asked to comment about the show's success, Kilgallen said, "What's my lines almost like a license to steal? I love to play games, and it's all fun. I get to the studio about 9:30 p.m. for makeup, because my skin is so light they have to put on a darker base and draw some eyebrows or something, and I have to use a darker lipstick. We all take it seriously, though Bennett has his puns and Arlene is very witty and has the personality that goes with it." As the series continued to terrific reviews, Kilgallen stood out, since she was the tough questioner, although some thought she was bitchy or snarky, even rude. Female viewers certainly admired her never backing down, her willingness to challenge male panel members and Daly. Friend and CBS producer Marlon Swing, who knew of Kilgallen's prowess at charades, recalled, "Dorothy played to win, but she was also a little girl playing games." A New York Post Daily Magazine article foreshadowed the tenacity Kilgallen would display when she investigated the JFK assassination. "Dorothy played the game like a relentless prosecutor." Comedian Steve Allen, husband of actress Jane Meadows, who often appeared as a guest panelist, said of her, "Dorothy's job on the panel was to ask impertinent questions. She probably guessed more people's jobs than anyone else." If one watches several of the program episodes, Kilgallen impresses with her ability to listen carefully and digest contestant clues in an instant. The woman who made just above average grades as a girl had certainly broadened her horizons, become sharper, more intelligent, perhaps as a result of covering so many criminal trials. Good attorneys she knew were good listeners, and she used a courtroom-type acumen on the program, along with what her producers called spunk, to guess unusual occupations. Behind the scenes, Kilgallen, who was seldom seen without wearing her trademark white gloves, battled for gender equality, a battle that foreshadowed her tendency to make enemies of those who sought to silence her, a tendency that would play a great part in her death in 1965. Little known were her weekly bouts with Cerf, a highly arrogant man who had co-founded the prestigious publishing company Random House in 1927, because we were just going to publish a few books on the side, at random. Like Kilgallen, who asked the first question of a contestant on the first show in 1945, and fellow regular panelist Arlene Francis, Cerf was paid $1,200 a week, while the guest panelist earned $500. To Kilgallen, it was much more than a game show. She took it quite seriously, to the point, according to a 1955 column by the celebrated Walter Winchell, of allegedly weeping when she did not guess a contestant's occupation for more than 3 shows. Kilgallen, never one to let a dig go by, wrote a column challenging Winchell's version of the story and demanding a retraction. It read, "Love letter. Dear Walter," passionately writes Dorothy Kilgallen, "you know, I always adore being mentioned in your column, but whoever gave you the item about my weeping after the program is a complete and utter phony. Truth is, I have a standing bet against myself, and every time I miss on what's my line, I win money. Retractions, retractions, all the time retractions." In a wide-ranging interview, Cerf told of his relationship with Kilgallen, stating in part, "Dorothy was always the outsider for 2 reasons. One, none of us liked her politics. She was a Hearst girl, and she had a different set of ideas than we did on Senator McCarthy and several other key problems. We just didn't think alike. But worse still, Dorothy was always a reporter, we began to discover that things we would talk about in our dressing room, clowning around before the show, would begin popping up in Dorothy Kilgallen's column. We didn't like that. Continuing, Cerf wrote, "One Sunday night, Dorothy really enraged John Daly. A well-publicized gangster in California had been jailed, a fellow named Mickey Cohen. There was a big stew about it. He had been interviewed on television by Mike Wallace and gotten front-page headlines. So for this Sunday, they had picked Mike Wallace as the mystery guest." Cerf added, "John said, 'I like Mike. I haven't got anything against him. But I'm not going to have him on this week, because the reason they asked him on this week is because he was mixed up with this gangster. I think that brings down the level of What's My Line.'" To Cerf's dismay, Dorothy promptly called up the Journal American and gave them the story. On Monday, it was on the front page of the newspaper. Cerf later wrote, "John Daly never forgave her for this. He said, 'I thought that we were a family during What's My Line. We've been doing it for years. What I said there was in confidence.' Dorothy responded, 'Not at all. I'm a reporter, and that was a big story. I certainly wasn't going to get scooped on my own story. You see, it was on the front page.' John said, 'Yes, because of this idea that I was maybe doing it out of personal jealousy.'" When it came to how Kilgallen played the game, Cerf commented, "Dorothy was dogged and persistent, and like a district attorney, she went plowing doggedly ahead. That was why she was the villain of the show. To the public, she was the villain. At any rate, Dorothy would go after contestants' occupations like a hawk, and people didn't like it. But they liked watching her because she was very shrewd." The squabble over the appearance of Mike Wallace was confirmed in a Journal American article with the headline, "Interviewer Ruled Out of TV Show at Daly's Suggestion." Details followed. New York, May 27th. ABC Vice President John Daly said today a scheduled appearance by TV interviewer Mike Wallace on the CBS show What's My Line was canceled at Daly's suggestion. Wallace's interview with ex-gangster Mickey Cohen, May 19th on Wallace's own ABC show, has led to threats of libel action by Los Angeles police officials and apologies from Wallace and ABC. Regardless, was Bennett Cerf, dubbed by a program reviewer as an owlish, avuncular publisher, simply jealous of Kilgallen's being arguably the face of What's My Line? Or were his comments valid? The truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But one observation may be that the program would have, in all likelihood, dipped in popularity if Kilgallen had left. But not so if Cerf was no longer part of the panel. Kilgallen's relationship with Arlene Francis, who had been a co-host with Dorothy and Lucille Ball on Mutual Broadcasting's Leave It to the Girls, a show similar to today's The View, appeared to be one of friendship, but not a close one. In an article entitled, "They Live a Few Doors from Each Other," and "Arlene and Dorothy Say They've Never Argued, But Neither Do They Visit Over Coffee," journalist Margaret McManus wrote, "Arlene Francis and Dorothy Kilgallen are neighbors in Manhattan, but it's not likely that they run back and forth to borrow a cup of sugar." McManus added, "They say they have never had any arguments about clothes, preferred camera angles, or who's taking the spotlight from whom." In her autobiography, Frances said that her becoming a member of the What's My Line cast began with a phone call in 1950 from a dedicated entrepreneur named Mark Goodson, who invited her to his home to consider a summer replacement TV show, just a 13-week deal. Several versions of this story exist, but according to Francis, who had hosted what many believe was the first dating television program, Blind Date, Goodson said, "We have John Daly and Dorothy Kilgallen coming over to the house on Sunday to see if it works, and we need you. So it won't be a total loss, I'll give you tea and crumpets." Francis said Goodson added, It's based on a simple proposition that Americans have a habit of following up on how do you do with what do you do. We're going to call it what's my line. Interested? A reaction, Francis wrote, was, it didn't sound wildly exciting, which is why Goodson Todman are millionaire producers and I'm not. But I told him to put the kettle on, that I'd be there. As everyone probably knows, the little 13-week deal ran for a quarter of a century, and I ran right along with it. Francis, who said, the show was upbeat, unpredictable, challenging, and some of the greatest fun I've ever had. It turned out to be not so much a show for me and for the others involved in it, but a way of life. Added, the mix that worked for us was one slightly acerbic wit, a tiny bit wicked but tremendously bright Kilgallen, one basically good girl who sometimes said marginally sexual things, guess who, one Peck's bad boy, Fred Allen, Steve Allen, and others. One urbane wit, sort of intellectual, but not dangerously so, Bennett Cerf. And one sophisticated, but not condescending, knowledgeable, able pundit, John Daly. Francis, described to this author by Daniel H. Lavezzo III, son of the former owner of P.J. Clark's, a famous Manhattan bar and restaurant, as a sensational person, warm, smiling, a woman with a bit of glamour, spoke often about Kilgallen. She said, Dorothy and I were philosophically in different camps, she a conservative Republican and I a liberal Democrat. I did feel that Dorothy sometimes used her column to attack people with whose politics she disagreed. However, I believe she had as much respect for me as I did for her. Once a year, we went to her house for the tree lighting ceremony on Christmas Eve, and she came to our house for people lighting whenever there was an excuse for it. On a lighter note, Francis explained, Bennett was probably the only one among us who was completely happy being who he was, Bennett Cerf. I wanted to be a great actress. Dorothy wanted to be perhaps Marilyn Monroe instead of the excellent newspaper woman she was. John Daly, the best of all moderators, wanted to be a newsman, and Steve Allen wanted to be John Daly. Mutual admiration was a byword, with Kilgallen quoted as saying, Arlene is very easy to get along with. She's always bright and laughing when we go on the air. Talking about Kilgallen, Francis said, Dorothy and I don't see each other very often away from the show. We've never had any problems working together. A strong comment, contrary to Cerf's dishing of Kilgallen. Regardless, What's My Line co-producer Mark Goodson had his own thoughts about why there could have been friction between Kilgallen and the rest of the program's cast. He said, she did run a gossip column. She did print things about friends of theirs. And she was not a part of the liberal establishment in New York, the chic, inside group of people in theater and communications. New York native Jojo Capecci told this author in April 2018 that she recalled the program was a must-watch, like Ed Sullivan or Jackie Gleason. She said, Kilgallen wasn't really high society, but she was so intelligent. No aristocratic strain. Kind of prissy, Catholic, sometimes pursing her lips. Writers became celebrities. We couldn't live without the newspapers. The Journal American, the Times, the World Telegram, and the Herald Tribune. But Dorothy was a must-read. And then she was on What's My Line, too. Capecci added, it was a high-class show, at a time when there were three martini lunches at the Stork Club and the Copa. Arlene was glamorous, but Dorothy was more of a brain. In addition to being a brain, another side to Kilgallen surfaced when she acted without fear during a tragic event in Manhattan. Later, at her funeral, a housewife named Rita Swobodzin called Kilgallen a hero of near superpower status. Swobodzin told Journal American reporters, she brought my baby out of a burning building. The building I lived in caught on fire. Miss Kilgallen was across the street, and she heard the sirens. She went into the building in her beautiful white and sequined dress, and she took my little baby, wet diapers and all, and carried him out of the building.